Full Service Radio is supported by Compass, the future of real estate in the Metro DC area and beyond. Discover more at compass.com. Full Service Radio programming is available on our website, fullserviceradio.org, and as a podcast, thanks to Simplecast. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Full Service Radio.
Hey there, you're listening to Pineapple Radio on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Atara.
And I'm your other host, Arielle. And we are the co-founders of Pineapple Collaborative, which is a community of over 60,000 women who love food. And you can find us online and offline. And what we do every single day is help women express their style, identity, and values through food. And that's exactly what our radio show, Pineapple Radio, is all about. And we've explored issues from food freedom to natural wine, food and music, and so much more. And we've got an awesome show for you here today. You probably may know us from our in-person events, which we host now, not only here in our nation's capital, but also New York City and the San Francisco Bay Area.
Launched that last week.
Shout out to Pineapple SF. It was an amazing launch party. We had an awesome panel all about food as community with leaders from La Cocina, which is an awesome kitchen incubator for immigrant women. We had the fifth generation owner of Guitard Chocolate, and Peru Ko, who leads this awesome organization called Real Food, Real Stories. So we're thrilled that, you know, we've now got a little bi-coastal action and are pumped to, you know, be sharing this mission of ours with so many of you across the country. So, you know, thank you for listening, and always hit us up on Instagram. You can send us a DM with any thoughts, questions you have about our radio, our in-person events, our newsletter, which comes out weekly, our blog content, which is all about peeking into the kitchens of women we admire. It's called Pine Four Pantry. Check it out. And speaking of Pine Four, Atara, what are we talking about here?
Pine Four is a hashtag that you may or may not have seen on Instagram and elsewhere. It's our philosophy that admiring another woman or woman-made product or woman-led movement or organization or company is powerful and it creates community. We think this is a pretty novel idea when we are usually taught to compete with each other and really try to get that one space at the top. We're trying to really lift as we climb. And we express that through our hashtag Pine Four. So use it on Instagram, on Facebook, in person, if you'd like, to celebrate other women that you really love and want to recognize.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And you are, you know, Atara's the creative mastermind behind so much of our beautiful content online. So you want to tell us
it's a collaborative effort, I would say, though.
I mean, it is a collaborative effort, but, you know, she's got some serious design skills. And, you know, can you tell us a little bit about our latest newsletter and what folks can find?
Yes, indeed. So this is one of my favorite parts about Pineapple. It's really our way to spread the message of Pineapple and all that we're doing every single week to a broad audience far and wide. It's, you know, a really great way to talk about our radio content and to update you on all the new shows we have. We talk about our latest events that are happening in DC, New York, and San Francisco. We talk about our blog content, Pine Four Pantry, and we also have a section of Pineapple Picks, which is essentially a guide to all pineapple things, our celebration of the great big world of women in food. So we talk about our favorite restaurants, our favorite products, articles, books, music, you name it. And it's a really great way for us all to express our identity, style, and values through food. So if that interests you at all, I hope it does. It's very easy to sign up. Just head to our website at pineapplecollaborative.com/join.
Awesome. And we featured Marissa Ross's pantry this week. She is the wine editor of Bon Appetit magazine. We actually had her on radio a few weeks ago.
She's a hoot.
She's not only a hoot IRL, but also her fridge and her kitchen is gorgeous. It's like full of LA sunshine. She has literally every kind of sparkling water as well as sparkling wine in her fridge.
She likes the bubbles, as do I.
Yeah. So it's inspiring for the weekend ahead if you're looking to stock up your, you know, spring fridge with all sorts of goodness. And before we dig into the theme of this show and the goodness there, which there is so much of it, it's time for our pantry picks. And this is something that Atara and I share every week on radio. And it's really the women-made products that we're pining for and stocking in our pantries right now.
So, it's also just like a live conversation of like discussions that we have all the time with each other because we love to talk about what we stock in our kitchens.
Yeah, pretty much live by food 24/7.
Yeah,
so this
exactly.
is just one element. So Tara, what are you digging this week?
Oh my gosh, so many things, but primarily J. Coco Chocolate. It's amazing. It's this wonderful chocolate company out of Seattle led by a woman named Jean Thompson. And I would say that their chocolate, like, I love it for so many reasons. First is that every bar, they collaborate with a chef. So it's very much like culinary driven and it is delicious. They have like wacky flavors like quinoa, sesame, agave, and white chocolate, orange, and cayenne, and it's amazing. But they also have a focus on like storytelling, and they ask their entire team to submit these like family photos, and they share them on the wrappers, and they share stories about their teammates, and it's really sweet. And the chocolate is damn good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had some last night. I love it.
It is good. What about you?
So my pantry pick today is not per se a product, but like my wannabe pantry, which is Each Peach Market. It is a woman-owned grocery store in the Mount Pleasant neighborhood here in Washington, D.C. It's, you know, really small, but it has everything you could possibly need and want and more inside its four little walls. And it's just so bright and friendly. They stock not only tons of amazing women-owned products made here in the D.C. area, but also from across the country. There's like dope, like raw cow, sheep, goat milk, cheese, and they have fava beans. Like, I haven't seen fava beans anywhere else in the DC area. So I'm just really into it right now. I wish I lived there. But, you know, I'll just have to settle for going there.
We can go there later, though. It is pretty special, for sure. So everyone out there, get some chocolate at jcocochocolate.com. Visit Each Peach when you're in DC. And yeah, without further ado, let's talk about what we're doing today on the show.
Yeah, and actually we're going to take a break because this is a pretty good segue before we dive into dun 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 ice cream.
Listening to Pineapple Radio. This song is by Kido, K-I-E-D-O, on SoundCloud. It's called Bring a Little Love. We will be right back. Full Service Radio is supported by Compass. Discover Compass, America's first modern real estate company. By pairing the industry's top agents with technology, Compass delivers an incomparable client experience from the first-time buyer to the seasoned seller. Visit them today in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia, or navigate compass.com day or night. We'll be right back.
Hey, welcome back to Pineapple Radio. I'm one of your hosts, Atara. I wanted to go ahead and introduce the theme of our show today. It's going to be delicious, needless to say. Today we're talking about all things ice cream, and in true pineapple fashion, this conversation is going to go far beyond the surface of our favorite frozen confections. We'll be covering a large swath of topics all through the lens of our favorite sweet treat. We will be talking about food freedom and the riots, not diets philosophy that we love. We'll be talking about collaboration over competition, sourcing and the supply chain, employment and labor, innovation and creativity, representation in the ice cream biz, and more. It's going to be a juicy topic, needless to say. And at the end of this show, we are going to be doing a taste test of ice creams from the businesses of our two guests who we're excited to introduce. And their flavors are based on different flavors that represent their style, identity, and values. So we're really excited to get into that. And this is our second official tasting. We had one with Marissa Ross and Julia Coney. We tried some delicious natural wine. And yeah, we are looking forward to that, needless to say.
Trying to make this like a regular mainstay of Pineapple Radio, because this is all about food after all.
Yeah,
food exactly. And beverage. But I'm so excited to introduce our lovely guests with us here today. First, we have Rabia Kamara. Kamara. Yes. Okay. Second try. Thank you. She is the creator and owner of Ruby Scoops, a retailer of ice creams, sorbets, sherbets, and other desserts, which got its start way back in June 2015 here in Washington, D.C. She's not only a successful businesswoman who's crushing the ice cream game here in the DMV, but she's, you know, been innovating with different flavors and sourcing practices while also, you know, surpassing racial discrimination as a young Black woman in the business world, and especially in the food and ice cream world, which we'll talk about throughout our conversation. She was quoted in an article about her business saying, you know, the whole food thing on the East Coast is all like white dudes, and it's really hard as a woman of color to walk up to someone and say, hey, I would like you to teach me how to do everything you do. For some reason, that's just not something that white men like to hear, so it was really hard for me to figure out how to get into a kitchen. Nevertheless, she did, and she's kicking ass, and we're lucky that we've got Ruby Scoops, you know, here in D.C. at farmers markets, eateries, groceries, all over the city, and, you know, we're going to talk much more about, you know, how she runs her business and is really involved in the community in so many ways. So thank you so much for
Welcome,
being
Rabia.
Here.
Thank you guys for having me. I'm excited to be here today.
Yeah. And second, but you know, just second.
Not last.
Not last. That's what I was trying to say here. I think I need another cup of coffee or ice cream. We have Victoria Lai from Ice Cream Jubilee, which is a gem of an ice cream shop, actually two shops here in D.C. She's got a location in the Navy Yard neighborhood as well as one on 14th Street. She is a corporate lawyer turned ice cream maven and focuses her business on new and exciting flavors that represent her surroundings. Think, you know, gin and tonic sorbet and Thai iced tea ice cream. She rotates these flavors on a seasonal basis. It's one of my favorite emails to get in my inbox when she does her press release saying, you know, spring flavors are here and
they're wackadoo flavors and they're delicious.
Yeah. No, it's so freaking good.
So good.
And I brought one of those wackadoo flavors.
Yay.
So yeah, she's not only innovative and creative, but it's always seeking to make the ice cream experience more fun. And she's also a mom, which, you know, is impressive in its own right, but also, you know, had her first child while starting her business. So we'll dig into that story as well.
Mad respect.
Totally, totally.
So, all of our moms did that. We have them to thank.
Yeah, yeah.
So ice cream and motherhood and joy, you know, Stay tuned.
Thank you so much for having me.
Welcome. Welcome, both of you. We're so excited to have you here.
Thank you.
Cool. So we are going to go ahead and dive in. Let's do it. So the first thing that we really want to talk about is your identity. First, will each of you please introduce yourself, introduce yourselves and share your food journey with us. Tell us what brought you to the beautiful world of ice cream. We'll start with Rabia.
Sure. My name is Rabia Kamara. I am from Silver Spring, Maryland, so I'm a DMV native. I've been cooking in this area now professionally for 6 years. So food has always been really close to my heart. It was probably outside of my family, like my first love. So I always knew that I wanted to be involved in something that had to do with food, because so many of my fondest memories from childhood are food focused, or food was there. So I cooked in this area for 4 years before I started Ruby Scoops. And what really drew me back to pastry and then back to wanting to do ice cream with my own business was watching all of the families and like the guests that came in and watching the children light up when they ate ice cream. I actually like saw a pair of sisters get into like a full-blown argument over scoops of ice cream that I had made. They got three and the parents took one and each of the kids had one, and one of the little girls got up to go to the bathroom and her little sister ate her ice cream.
Oh, man.
And when she came back, she like had a full-on fit. Her parents had to like take her to the car. And I remember, I come from a big family. I'm the youngest of seven. So I know what it's like to be like really excited, to want to eat that last like treat your parents had for you, and then someone else ate it. And remembering how I felt and watching those memories kind of being made in front of me, I realized that was what I wanted to share of myself with people, was my love for food and my food that I make, and watching them, you know, share those memories and carry on with them for the rest of their lives.
Clearly a, you know, super emotional, evocative thing for all of us, ice cream. So that's awesome. And what about you, Victoria?
Well, you know, Ice Cream Jubilee was my first foray into food. But like Rabia, ice cream has played such a positive and wonderful role in my life. And what I always tell my staff and tell other folks is that we are in the forever memory business. You know, every single person has a happy memory about ice cream. It could be with your grandfather holding his hand and walking down to the store. Or it could be, you know, with your college roommates and, you know, 16 tubs of pints surrounding you because of something that happened, or just because you're all together. Everybody has a happy memory about ice cream. Mine, for me, it was when I was little and my dad would come home from work. He had to work late a lot when we were growing up. And though he couldn't have dinner together, he would yell up the stairs and say, "Who wants ice cream?" And we'd jump out of bed, run down the stairs. My mom would be like, "They just got inside." And we would share ice cream with my dad and talk about our day. And this was so memorable. And it feels like we did it every single night. And we probably didn't do it every single night, but the way that it sticks in your brain, it's like you might eat a burrito every single day, but you're not going to remember it like you remember ice cream. But I didn't go into ice cream initially. After I finished school, my passion was public service, and it still is public service and politics, policy. And so I went into political campaigns, worked on a presidential campaign, went to law school, started working in the justice fields and for new immigrants. And I loved it, and I knew what I was doing was so important, but there was something that about it that didn't fit me, even though it was good work. And that's why I really love your mission, you know, expressing your style, identity, and values through food, because that's what I was striving to do. And that's how I got into making ice cream for 4 hours after I was done with work every day to distribute my ice cream. You know, I would hop into an Uber, because I didn't have a car at the time, hop into an Uber with my ice cream in coolers and deliver it to the grocery stores that were taking a chance on me to start. And, you know, interestingly enough, these first few grocery stores were all women-led, women-owned, and those are the opportunities that helped me get ahead. And then lo and behold, now I find myself here with two ice cream shops, and the two things that fuel me most to keep going are, one, creating new flavors, because that's always the fun part of it, and then seeing smiles on people's faces. Everybody always leaves Ice Cream Jubilee happier than when they came in.
It's wonderful. Clearly, you know, the emotion of joy is what brings us all to ice cream in the end. And, you know, it is interesting that you mentioned that ice cream can be a really great vehicle to express your style, identity, and values through food. So we want to talk a little bit more about that. What has it been like for each of you of being women of color, minority women, starting a business, and specifically getting into ice cream? Rabia, it's a big question.
It is. I think it's been a lot. My whole, like I said, the only thing I've done professionally is cook. After I graduated college, I was supposed to go to law school, and I was like, I'm not going. I applied to culinary school. This is what I'm doing. I worked in a lot of restaurants where I was, if not the only woman, definitely the only black woman. And that came with a lot of stigmas attached to it, whether or not I necessarily fit them. Anything that I did was easily attributed to my race and my sex. So I think having the ability to start my own company and being really focused on wanting my logo to be also a black female, it wasn't supposed to be me, but it turned out to be me. That was important to me because I think growing up, all women, not even just like women of color, there's a major lack of representation in what it is that we think we want to do. So knowing that, like, I want to cook and not really seeing any other women that cooked outside of like watching PBS and seeing like Julia Child or Two Fat Ladies who were all like older white women. So I was like, oh, okay. So you just wait till you're like 60 and then you get that life. So having the ability to represent that and kind of stand in the things that are my identity and be able to be proud of them and still be in business. That's important to me, but I do think it comes with some caveats being a minority woman, but I don't think I necessarily let that hold me back. I'm very persistent. And so whether or not I don't really let those things, I don't like chalk that up to the issue. Like, oh, you don't want to work with me because I'm a woman, or you don't want to work with me because I'm black. I don't really think those things. Yeah. If things don't feel like they're fitting or it's not an opportunity that's going to work for me, I seek other opportunities and kind of keep pushing forward.
Right on.
Yeah.
And have there been any other women in food that you've looked up to that have kind of shaped your trajectory and your path? I ask that because I think that you're a great example of a woman in food that a lot of little, you know, young women look up to. And I think that's a really powerful thing. That's what representation's all about.
I think
yeah.
The first person I ever worked for when I was in culinary school was Carla Hall. So that was exciting because at that time, and even now, like, Carla's still one of the bigger names in media and also like as a black female chef. So it was really exciting to like be in that space and like around her energy. And this was all around the time that The Chew was starting. So to see how she's grown herself as an individual and as a chef and as, like, you know, a personality, I think all of that is amazing. And I like look up to that. I don't know if there are any older women or like people that have been doing this longer than me that I'm like, this is what I want to do. There was somebody I originally reached out to when I wanted to start Ruby Scoops, that is a woman-owned ice cream company. And when I asked them for help, they said no.
Wow.
So that for me was like, okay, well, so I wouldn't say that there's anyone in particular that I look up to that's older than me, but I have peers that I work along with or I have seen do some things that I'm like, yo, you're doing some really awesome stuff. And like, I can't wait to see where this takes you.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. We'll definitely get into the competition thing soon, too. That's a hot topic.
And before we dive into Victoria's answers, we actually have had the opportunity to feature Carla Hall. She's
yeah.
a huge
she's so
inspiration
awesome.
For us as well. And we peeked into her kitchen in New York City. So there's a Pine 4 Pantry blog post all about that
like
on
Rosia.
Our website. Not sure there's Ruby Scoops there in her freezer because
she's in New York.
yeah, but exactly. I'm sure her DC kitchen has got it going on.
I sure hope so.
All right, Victoria, what about you?
To be honest with you, when I was starting out, I didn't think too much about my identity as a Chinese woman in food so much. I had my brain full with the identity shift of going from a professional corporate dream job in the Obama administration to something small and unpredictable. And that was a huge shift for me personally. However, you know, when I do dig deep and say, like, who am I? How is this shaping my business? It's brought nothing but strength. You know, like I mentioned, the first grocery stores and local markets like Each Peach that we mentioned and Glensgard Market and so many others are women-led, women-owned, and their ability to say, it's important for me to support other women, creates opportunities and creates successful businesses like Rubia's and like mine. And that sisterhood is so important. That's what you cultivate through Pineapple. And maybe it already exists through in a male world, or maybe that's just a default through the established supply chain, you know, corporate world that exists that is extremely difficult to break into. You know, once you try to work with large grocery chains and everything, you see the shift from women to men almost immediately. But then also my identity as a Chinese woman just has created so many opportunities for flavors. You know, this past winter, we had a very long winter and it was so cold, and I thought it was a great opportunity to experiment with some new flavors. So we had a whole Chinese New Year, well, Lunar New Year, to be inclusive, tasting flight where we had Japanese, Korean, and Chinese inspired flavors and Thai flavors. And just I did it because I thought it would be fun, but seeing how Washington, D.C. and people from the surrounding states heard about it, they wanted to come in and say, this is me, because I also love ice cream and I also grew up with roasted barley tea and I love that flavor. I've never tried it in an ice cream and this is a home run. That's great. And hearing that sort of thing when I took a chance really made me feel good about what I'm doing.
Wow, that's very cool. Are those ice creams still available at your shop, or not anymore because it's past?
Not anymore. Let's see. Kiwi lemongrass sorbet is still there. Thai iced tea is always there. Citrus Sichuan peppercorn is sometimes there. But I really love the roasted barley, and I want to bring that back.
Great. All right. Well, we'll stay tuned. And I know you have some amazing new flavors, which you're going to share with us and that are available. So we'll get into that, but both of your answers, I want to dig into so much. You shared so much goodness there. I think one theme here is the collaboration over competition, and you know, both of you are ice cream owners, you know, ice cream business owners, ice cream makers here in DC, and we're sitting here together talking about the ice cream business. So in one way, you could say you're competitors, but what we've come to know at Pineapple with the DC women in food community in particular is that this is one of the most collaborative, supportive communities of women, not only in food, but women in business. And now, as women, there can be so much said about disadvantages we have, you know, making it in the food world. But one thing that Pineapple is really trying to foster, and I think we've seen with both of your businesses in different ways, is, you know, women supporting other women in ways big and small. So whether that's just, hey, I'm really craving ice cream today, seeking out, you know, Ice Cream Jubilee or Ruby Scoops or another woman-owned ice cream business, or, you know, it's two, you know, ice cream makers talking amongst themselves about how can we improve our craft, how can we improve our business. And that value of a network of supportive people who can help your business in all different stages is actually an incredible asset to growing your business and sustaining it. And that's something that we've been exploring at Pineapple that we're excited to explore with you two today. So that gets me to my question, which is, tell us about your perspective on collaboration over competition in the ice cream space. And, you know, why is this important for women? Who wants to take this?
I could start. I think of the actual, like, DC-based ice cream companies, I'm maybe, like, the baby, or if not the baby, I'm the toddler that's, like, not walking it. but it would be Ice Cream Jubilee, then, like, Milk Cult, and me. And I don't know if I'm forgetting someone.
There are other gelato companies.
Yes, the gelato companies. I apologize. I'm just thinking about the Union Kitchen ice cream.
And the gelato companies are about 6 years older than me. Yeah.
Dolcezza, as I call it, they are in their bar/bat mitzvah year. They're doing their thing. So they're teenagers. I don't really even look at it that way. But we all came out of Union Kitchen. So coming out of Union Kitchen or being kind of in that same space at the same time or successively one after the other, I think being able to see everyone's operation and seeing how hard everyone was working and the different levels everyone is kind of at, it made me feel less like I have to compete or play dirty and more like, okay, this is my motivation to keep moving forward. We're all doing it. We're all making it work in different ways and we're doing it and getting along. And that, to me, I really enjoy, especially being in industry most of my working life and seeing people sometimes sabotage each other in kitchens or throw someone under the bus or things of that nature. And then moving, still being in food, but moving, shifting from being an employee and a manager, but still an employee, and to being an employer and a business owner, and how that shifted it from being kind of competitive and I have to be better than you, and then more instead of how can I help you get to where you think you want to be if we're all on different levels. When I started, I was using Milk Cult's machine, and I think maybe same, but we were all trying to figure out our own machines because they're really expensive. So having the ability for someone to be hey, I use this for my business, but you can use this for your business as well. That to me was really exciting and cool for them to do. And I've run into Victoria in spaces. The first time we met, it was absolutely fine. It was hi, I'm Rubia. I'm Victoria. And people were do you know who that was? And I'm like, is it supposed to be weird? I'm supposed to be don't talk to me. We don't talk to each other. And anytime we see each other, it's hey, how you doing? What's up? What's new? And can we get together sometime? And of course the answer is always yes. It's just difficult because we can't actually sit down. But there's never been a time that I think I've reached out to another ice cream maker or even another small food business owner in DC and been hey, I have this idea, and they're kick rocks. And I really, really enjoy and appreciate being in that kind of community.
That's powerful.
One thing that I would add to that is, in addition to the ice cream community being collaborative, I think it's beyond collaborative. It's personal. Ed and Pat and Rabia and me and Rob and Violetta and everybody, we all know each other, even if we don't hang out. And we would pick up the phone if we saw them calling, and maybe they're out of sugar, or maybe they just have a question about an employee who's applied to them, or I just reached out to another business about I love your packaging, maybe we could go in on bulk for that. And that sort of thing, that win-win, is happening all over, because I can reach out to a pizza business or a bagel business or, donuts or anything. And they're having the same struggles that we are as small business owners, whether they're male or female, for the most part. Small business is tough without any of the drama. So What I always think about is, I don't know what I don't know. So having that conversation and meeting another person, hearing their side of the story, their joys as well as their troubles, will only broaden your universe and the possibilities of ways to solve these things.
It's really inspiring that the ice cream community here has, banded together and created this really nice community of learning and inspiring each other. And I think one thing that Arielle and I always like to talk about with the pineapple woman is that she's not just buying a carton of Jubilee. She's not just buying a carton of Dolcezza or Ruby Scoops. She's supporting all of these businesses together. And I think that there is a lot of opportunity to work together, collaborate, and lift each other up, because, the women in our community are not just expressing their style, identity, and values through ice cream at one place.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I would add to that is, as much as our commitment to each other and our audience's commitment to our businesses, it's a joint statement of how important community is. Right. Because it is, people always ask, what's the challenge of running an ice cream company and making your ice cream in Washington, D.C.? among the top, there are no cows in Washington, D.C. Like, we are committed to a local product, but we don't have farms and farms of cows. If we were in Vermont or Minnesota or Wisconsin or even California or Texas, it would be a different model, but we want to do it here because that is the best product for you to try. And if you say, I want to try this new flavor, Victoria, why don't you bring this thing back? You know, we can do that at a moment's notice because we're not shipping cross country. We're not storing in warehouses. And I think the more people understand how challenging it is to have a local business that's open the hours that Washington, D.C. residents work and play, they'll be refueled in their commitment to supporting local. And you certainly help with that. And thank you.
Oh, thank you. Well, that's really interesting that you bring that up. I mean, let's dig more into the sourcing and the philosophies therein. So a lot of your flavors and just your ethic around ice cream and food is shaped by your sourcing and where you get your products. So Rabia, can you start and tell us a little bit about how the sourcing of the ingredients has really inspired you and your flavors?
Absolutely. Again, you guys you're probably like, we get it, you cook. This is all I've ever done, and I've been really lucky to work under chefs and like within restaurants that are really focused on local and seasonal produce. So I've met a lot of farmers, and I've gotten to understand what's available when and like when the best season is for that. Because I think growing up in a nation as this one, like you can have really whatever you want to eat whenever, and you don't understand like the time those things are grown and when the best time to have them is and who actually grows that fruit and who picks that fruit. And so getting to really step inside of how that process worked starting in 2011 really fascinated me. And it led me to really want to support my local producers and my own local economy by buying locally. So that was something I started when I was cooking and like would do it at home, and I knew I really wanted to do when I started Ruby Scoops. But another thing that we don't have on top of not having cows is because we live in America, we don't have vanilla, we don't have chocolate, we don't have coffee. So all of those things to an extent are being imported to us. So the way that I have kind of found a way to appease myself and my philosophy, which is local, small batch, like seasonal sourcing, is to utilize my other connections. So I am a first generation African American. My mother is Egyptian and Mauritius, or Mauritian. So she's from Mauritius Island. She just came home today. Hi, mommy. I didn't see her yet because I've been working all day. So she is from Mauritius Island, which is right next to Madagascar Island. So every year when she goes home, she brings me back vanilla. So my vanilla is like, we have a woman that we work with that's like, hey, I have this stuff for your daughter. It feels really like a little druggy because she's like, how many kilos do you want? I'm like, don't text me that. But it's cool because like we know the people that we're getting the vanilla from, and she's bringing it back. Like basically it has to be like in her hands and her carry on. So our vanilla ice cream is really near and dear to my heart because it's literally traveling with my mother from her home to mine. And I really enjoy being able to share that with people, especially because growing up, being African in America was not cool. Now Wakanda's cool, so it's cool to be African. So I'm going to capitalize on that for the rest of my life now that it's time.
Let's keep that up, too.
Yeah, keep it up, everybody. Keep loving Africa. So that's part of it. I have a cousin who has a friend who basically like sources and does all his own coffee. So I get my coffee from him, or I try to get them from other small businesses that are roasting locally. And same with chocolate. I try to get that from companies around here who make chocolate bars, but sometimes maybe things temper out of whack or they need to like have liquor that they need to sell. And that is my way around kind of locally sourcing exotic ingredients that are very normal for ice cream that we've all grown to love and get used to. And, you know, again, with the local sourcing or understanding how weather affects things, last year, we lost 20% of the world's vanilla population to a cyclone, which sounds like not a lot, but it jacked all the prices up, like literally like 200%.
Mm. Wow.
So a little container of vanilla extract went from being $9 to $35. A whole gallon of vanilla is like $250.
And you can bring that up with any baker anywhere in the country or probably the world, and you'll see blood pressures rise immediately.
Yeah. people
really
like,
a big deal.
I feel like last year people were like, this isn't as vanilla-y as usual. And I'm like, it cost me like three times as much. Please bear with me. I can't. It's just things like that that I don't think we think about. And that's why I think it's so important to us to focus on local and seasonal like sourcing, because the way that the world is kind of going down, you never know at what point we may lose some of the things we've gotten so used to.
Definitely.
And food is such an incredible vehicle to learn about the context in which it's made.
Right.
And for so long, we haven't really asked those questions, and it's not been conveyed in the marketing. And, you know, I think one of Pineapple's goals is, you know, to continue telling the stories, not only of the makers of those products, but, you know, the vanilla farmer in Mauritius, the, you know, dairy farmers you're working with regionally.
Right.
And that is a really important aspect of ice cream, is vanilla, dairy, you know, you name it.
Yeah, and it's cool that it's local seasonal sourcing, but it's also meaningful sourcing.
Right.
It's about the story behind where you get the product.
Yeah. And, you know, I think especially for people who come from immigrant families, like understanding all of the work that went into getting you here and into where you are, and trying to find ways to share how important that is with the people around you, especially like your guests, even in small ways, like being able to do flavors that represent you, being able to use ingredients that represent and come from where I'm from. Those are small ways of us being able to infuse ourselves and what's important to us into our food.
So before we jump to you, Victoria, just a quick follow-up. How much time would you say you spend chatting or, you know, emailing, talking on the phone, visiting the farmers in your network? Because I know local sourcing is so important to you.
So I do a lot of farmers markets still.
Yeah.
So I see most of my farmers on a weekly basis, and are now like planning trips to like take the staff out there and hang out now that strawberries are back and the sun is out. We can like hang out with the little baby cows and do all that fun stuff. But I'm probably talking to them at least every week.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hit us up when you're doing your farm field trips.
Come on.
We'd love to come with.
Come with you to Mauritius.
Yeah.
And get some vanilla.
Also
quite
to Mauritius. I was thinking Virginia, Maryland, but Mauritius works
too. My mom's
too.
All on. So I'm like, if your friends get tickets, I got the rest. So, you know.
Oh,
careful, great. Be careful what
We're
you
there.
Wish for.
Victoria, please tell us about, you know, your sourcing philosophy, as well as, you know, the creation of flavors.
Well, you know, great ice cream has to come from great cream. And I think that our number one partner in all of this is South Mountain Creamery, where I get all of our cream. We use 18% butterfat cream for our ice cream, which is much higher than usual, which means that every bite that you taste carries more flavor. It's our ice creams are less sweet because it has that wholesome goodness about it. But I bring my team up to their Maryland farm about twice a year to meet all the new cows and talk with the owner. And the owners of the farm have run this farm. It's one of the oldest running family-owned farms in Maryland. They have their own dairy processing plants and all of this nitty-gritty food manufacturing things that are huge milestones in the agricultural world and as a small business. And I love that I can partner with them to help them continue with what they know and love doing, because the dairy market is, you know, as we talk about fluctuations in the vanilla market, the dairy market has been going through a lot of change too, whether it's because of sourcing or international trade laws, and, you know, milk being purchased and sold between Canada and Mexico. All of these things affect the dairy prices that affect our farms. And those are the things that nobody really likes to know when they purchase their kitty scoop of banana bourbon caramel. But that's a real thing that our partners think about on a daily basis, and so we want to be there with them supporting. And I love your idea of a field trip. Let's make that happen.
Absolutely.
I recently found out that an acquaintance from high school and his wife have a farm, and I was like, say less. I'll be up there very soon. They're like, you guys are having a baby? So I'll come in like 4 weeks. Like, cool. You should be settled with her.
Awesome. Well, I don't know about you ladies, but I'm getting hungry. We were excited to dig into some of these ice creams. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Victoria Lai and Rabia Kamara. And
Kamara.
Damn. We'll see you in a minute.
More music from Kido here. That's K-I-E-D-O. Find his music on SoundCloud. You are listening to Pineapple Radio. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Pineapple Radio. We are talking all things ice cream today, from sourcing to food freedom to flavors and collaboration and over competition. We are here with Rabia from Ruby Scoops and Victoria from Jubilee. I'm Atara.
Ice cream Jubilee.
Yes, my name exactly.
Ariel. We're the co-founders of Pineapple Collaborative. And let's dig into our tasting.
Let's go for it.
So we're going to start with Victoria, and what is the first flavor that you brought in the studio today?
So I brought this. This is one of our classic flavors, banana bourbon caramel. I think it just pops with so much flavor.
Awesome. All right. And why is this one of your best sellers?
Well, I'll let you take a bite and take a taste of it. Because I think that the flavor of the ripe bananas right in that ice cream, it just pops. You know, there's so much talk about many new flavors of ice cream that are making it onto the market that lower their calorie counts or their prices because of flavorings. No, real banana and real cream is really the way to go. And we hand make all the caramel that goes in as well.
Yeah, that's delicious. So good.
Banana-y, cinnamony.
Yeah, it tastes like more than what I see.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also in all of the grocery stores and Whole Foods that we're sold in. That's our top seller.
Awesome. Rabia, how about you?
Hello. I don't know where to start. I'm over ambitious, so I brought too many flavors.
Start with your favorite of the three, if you can choose.
Make you choose a favorite child. Let's start with DC's favorite. So this is mango sorbet. That's our best seller, like literally any and everywhere we go. They're probably sold out of it at the market right now because nobody's answering me.
Oh my
so that's
God.
What I assume. So
that's awesome.
Growing up in an African household, and I have very fond memories of like eating mangoes in Egypt and Mauritius, like just peeling back the skin. And that was what I really wanted to emulate in this, like just straight frozen mango flavor.
That's beautiful. And it's
thank you.
The mango flavor, but it's citrusy. It's bright.
Yeah.
So good.
And it is non-dairy.
Yeah. Smooth AF.
Thank you.
I mean, for so many of us, you know, ice cream aisle looks crazy these days, right? Mm-hmm. There's so many options, and how do you even know where to begin? But for me, I go to the ice cream aisle, an ice cream shop, because I like am craving something sweet, delicious. It's the joy. You know, I used to get so tied up in, oh, is this going to make me fat? Is this going to make me break out? You know, for a while I had a really big dairy sensitivity and, you know, I couldn't eat ice cream, which was really sad. And it's not the same as sorbet. And you know, you couldn't be just like, oh, just like eat mango sorbet instead of like mint chocolate chip. It was like, no, I want both. There's a time and a place for each. And so, you know, I love that both of you have a variety of flavors that allow people with different needs, preferences, allergies to like still experience that joy when it comes to ice cream. So I think that's a perfect segue for your next one.
On that note, the other flavor that I brought in, and I'm really excited and proud about this, is our vegan, non-dairy chocolate peanut butter. Because even though I myself am not vegan, honestly, I consume a lot of dairy as an ice cream person, I am a huge chocoholic, and I do love that one scoop of ice cream before I go to bed, even if it's just a teaspoon. And this has that same feeling of, you know, a square of a chocolate bar, and it has the creaminess from coconut that you won't get in a sorbet.
Thank you.
Yum.
That is so rich. You would never know that it's non-dairy.
Exactly. You don't. A lot of people don't know it. So we also have a coffee non-dairy sorbet called Espresso Colada in all of our shops right now, and that's really popular, and I really look forward to doing more with that. However, I have to just mention for everybody that technically, it is still a sorbet. Anything that is a frozen dessert that does not have dairy is a sorbet. So this is, so we end up calling it a creamy sorbet because I just like, as a stickler, hardline former attorney, I can't call it an ice cream if it has no cream in it. And it's
the legal. It kills me when people are like, what ice creams do you have that don't have dairy in them? I'm like, well, legally, technically speaking, I don't have any.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So we get that question all the time. What non-dairy ice creams do you have? And we don't want sorbets. Well, if you want non-dairy, it's going to be a sorbet, but we do have these creamy ones that aren't fruity, you know? So it's fine. It's fine. But do come in and try them all. We usually have 4 to 6 different non-dairy vegan options at all times.
I love the creaminess of it because I think, you know, in that phase of no dairy, it was like straight fruit, which again is delicious.
But you get tired of it.
But like, dude, you want some like creamy chocolate cookie something, that's totally my jam. So that hits the spot.
And then like with Mother's Day coming up, I talked with so many of my friends who went from eating ice cream all through their pregnancy, and then they have their baby, and for whatever reason, maybe it's just temporary, or maybe it's longer term, they have to go entirely off dairy, and to go entirely off ice cream is just a little cruel on top of staying up in the middle of the night. So I hope that this hits a spot with that market.
Yeah, you know, a lot of minorities can't ingest dairy. So I have a lot of friends who,
when they were
a lot of friends when they were pregnant were like, I need ice cream. And as soon as they had the baby, found out the baby was lactose intolerant. And they were what do I do? So we are actually getting ready to debut our non-dairy for shelves, which is chocolate coconut. So that's going to be going into Glenn's. It's already at Dawson's Market.
When is that rolling out?
It's already at Dawson's, and then it should be at Glenn's within the next 3 weeks.
Everyone,
that's our non-dairy frozen dessert, if you will.
Beautiful. So, Rubia, let's try one more from Ruby Scoops.
So, this is our dulce de leche. It was one of our signature flavors that we stopped carrying in store, but we usually have at markets. So, again, fond food memories. I went to Argentina when I was 8 with our family, and we stayed in Mar del Plata, and that was the first time I ever had like dulce de leche, but they made it. So they like made a whole bunch of it, and I became obsessed, and I put it on like everything the whole time that I was there. So having the ability to kind of recreate a dulce de leche flavor when the only one that's really on the market is Haagen-Dazs and do it better made me very happy.
That is really beautiful. It's like a deep caramel flavor.
Yes. So we also caramelize the condensed milk ourselves.
You can taste it for
Thank
sure.
Thank you.
All right. Beautiful. So we are almost out of time. What we're going to do now is go to our Spitfire round. So this is, you know, our opportunity to learn more about our guests and hear more about who and what they pine for. So our first question is for Victoria, a woman in food you pine for.
I have a girl crush on Rose Previtt of Compass Rose and Maiden. I'm not the only one in DC. She's amazing. She's so warm-hearted. She's amazingly giving of her time and herself, and she's always dressed so fabulously.
Oh yeah,
and her food is amazing. I don't even need to mention that.
Yeah. What about you, Rabia?
I have a couple of, we'll call it, lady food crushes. Zachary Curtis of Good Sense. and Dreaming Out Loud. Zachary's my boo thing. I just love everything about her and like her philosophy and her energy. And Crystal, no surprise there.
Crystal
Call Mac. I like her a lot. We actually, I think, made friends on Instagram. And then I was like, hey, every year I should talk to you about this, but not now. Every year I assemble and get the sponsors for the ice cream contest. So like all the ice cream contests or anything ice cream related at DC State Fair, I do. So I was like, hey, I know we're not like real friends, but do you want to come judge this ice cream contest? And she was like, I'll be there. So after that, I just love her. Everything that she makes looks awesome. I love her spirit as well and energy. I'm big on like energies and how you feel about food and how you feel about other women in general. And so those two, there are many, but those two are kind of the top of the list right now.
Right on. We're with you.
So what about your favorite women-made food product?
So this isn't as sherry as it could be, but mine is the wedding cake that Tiffany McIsaac made for me and my husband. Mm. It's amazing. We actually own her website. That's sort of crazy, but it was passion fruit and lime curd, and there was some white cake and there was some almond cake, and then I couldn't decide, so she added another layer with different fillings, and yes. It was all together. It was just amazing, and I kept one of the amazing sugar flowers made by Alex Mundry, and I kept it in my fridge forever and just stared at it. It's like, oh, they're such geniuses, and they are.
Buttercream Bake Shop is Tiffany McIsaac's spot. It's magical. Hit it up if you're ever in D.C.
Even if you're not getting married, get all the treats.
Oh, yeah.
All of them.
Such good treats.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard for me. So, let's think. Okay, so I'm very juice bougie. So, like, I complain at brunch, like, I'm not going to spend $14 on a French toast, but I will buy a $14 green juice, like, no problem. I'm like, what's that? I'll take that. So I'm trying to think, who's my favorite like juice lady? I like Misfit. I like Fruitive a lot. They're also women owned. I'm like, who else?
No, that's great.
I'm a big yogurt and granola person. So there's this company called Yaourt. So it's like Y-A with like an umlaut. O-U-R-T. They make Vietnamese style yogurt.
Cool.
So they like caramelize the milk. That and then that plus Michelle's granola or Purely Elizabeth granola.
Mm-hmm. So you just answered our next question, which was what was your favorite what's your go-to pantry and fridge item? So we see you on the yogurt and granola.
Yogurt, granola, green juice.
Victoria, how about you?
Well, I have to eat a lot of savory at home to offset all the ice cream that I'm eating at work. So I love to cook with gochujang. I love when my husband cooks with gochujang sauce. And I'm really into halva these days.
And what is gochujang for our listeners?
Gochujang is, it's like a fermented bean, spicy Korean
chili
condiment.
Paste.
Yeah, chili paste, but it has different levels of spiciness. And to throw back to the women-made food products, I also am a huge fan of little tamale carts. You know, tamale carts all around the city. Now that's like on the other end, like let's not just be bougie about women-owned, women-created food.
Yeah.
I love all of those and those women hustle.
Hell yeah. I am big into the unsung heroes and women, sheroes and heroes in food.
Give me an igloo cooler of tamales any day.
Yes.
Have you met Joanna of Manos de Mais?
Yes.
Yeah. She's across from us at the market now. I'm excited to get back so I can have a quecas, honestly. I'm like, I want a quesadilla.
All right, beautiful. Our last question is, where can our audience find you?
Oh.
Whether that's on Instagram or IRL. Rabia.
On Instagram, you can find us at Ruby Scoops IC. IC as in ice cream. Same on Twitter, facebook.com/RubyScoops, rubyscoops.com. And then grocery stores, Glen's Garden Market, Union Kitchen Grocery, Dawson's Market, Mom's Coming Summer 2018. Restaurants, Mandu, Macon, Tolly Moly, Dio Wine Bar. I'm forgetting like two more. Sorry, y'all.
Go to your website.
AKA
go to
the
website.
She's crushing it.
And then we pop up at least 3 times a month at the Spice Suite.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Victoria?
That's awesome. That's a great list. I have two stores. One is at the Yards Park down in Southeast Washington, D.C., right by the Navy Yard and the Nationals Baseball Stadium. It's a really fun area to enjoy the beautiful weather that's coming. The other ice cream store, our ice cream store, is at 14th and T Street. It's at 1407 T Street, right by Colada Shop in the Taqueria. Online, we are at Ice Cream Jubilee on Instagram, and you always get behind-the-scenes scoops on how we make our flavors and upcoming flavor creations that we do. That's the same for Twitter and Facebook and everything else. And we're also in lots of grocery stores. We're in 6 different Whole Foods from P Street and H Street and Tenleytown and all over the place. Glen's, of course, and each peach that we mentioned has great local products. So you can stock up on everything when you're all of these places.
And quick question before we wrap up. Can our audience order online for either of you yet? / at all?
Absolutely for us. And we're on Uber Eats. So definitely in the best days or the worst days. Ice cream is great. And ice cream delivered to your couch is even better. So, and then we also do nationwide shipping. So if you have a friend who'd love to try our flavors, go online and click through, and we'll send a box of dry ice with 6 pints.
Cool. Well, yeah.
Things are getting a little out of hand with the online for us.
It's so hard. I can't even imagine logistically how you do that with ice cream. No.
In the words of the dream, we had to shut that thing down. but the plan is to reopen e-commerce with cookies probably by June.
Yes. Well, speaking of shutting things down, I think it's about time we shut down this episode. Producer Jack's giving us those eyes. But before we do, this conversation about ice cream has not just been about the deliciousness of it, but really the joy, the strength, the community that it brings to not only a city like DC, but all across the country. I can't believe we didn't even talk about sprinkles, rainbow sprinkles, are give me life. So I'll be digging into those with the rest of the ice cream. And thank you all so much for joining us. You can find us at Pineapple Collaborative on Instagram. Send us a DM with any questions you have about this episode or otherwise. And we want to see you in person. Our next event here in Washington, D.C. is on Thursday, May 10th. It's called Seeding Social Change. It's all about how urban agriculture is cultivating more than vegetables, but also social justice. So meet us there, and we'll see you next time. Thanks so much for tuning in.